mothers.
And others.
Somewhere in the music industry, between sex, drugs and rock and roll and the Wiggles, is the rest of us. Music Mothers and Others is an audio parents group about popular music, a chance to discuss how parenting fits or doesn't into music industry life. During the series, we'll talk to people from across the industry, artists, promoters, techs, broadcasters, writers, academics, teachers, anyone who has a gig in industry, whatever that means. Your hosts are Liz.
Hello.
And Shelley. Hi, that's me. And we are industry veterans, academics and parents, as well as members of the broader village.
So today, to Music Mother and Others, it's Mary and Kate from the Gotta Be Done Bluey podcast, the amazing Bluey podcast. You may want to pause this or stop this and go and listen to them immediately, if not simultaneously. The Melbourne ladies, their journo ladies, their Bluey broadcaster extraordinaires. But ladies, can you tell us a little bit more about what you do, your otherness, as it were? Maybe Kate first, then Mary.
Oh, yeah, sure. Mary and I met at university. We were both studying journalism together, and we've both had dalliances, I'd say, over the years within music. So I was an entertainment reporter for a very long time, both here and in the UK. Bigwigging it with lots of celebrity people across the globe. And Mary has been a producer extraordinaire, as well as a writer for the Herald Sun and working with ABC's 730 Project, lots of other amazing organisations. And now we're both working in comms for the government. But Mary hooked me into deciding to do a podcast about Bluey. She saw that the crest of interest was peaking and we were both pretty obsessed with the show, so it's worked out really well for us.
I think the only crest of interest we cared about at the time was our crest of interest because we were just, it was all we were talking about, this amazing show called Bluey, and I think especially once we really started looking at it, the music of Bluey as well. And once we realised that we were doing so much talking about it, the next logical step was to start making a podcast.
And it's just gone all over the place, hasn't it, girls? Like, it's just, I follow as Bluey moves around the world. Well, you're leading the charge now, aren't you? Because you had international listeners before the American release of this new season. Is that right?
Yeah. We're getting a lot of fan mail from some strange places and I'm all here for it. Yeah. We had a couple emailers saying that they were listening to us while driving around Sweden. And we got some lovely fan mail actually from, was it Mississippi this week or Missouri? Or
I think it was Missouri, yeah. But, yeah. But you're right, Liz. Like, Bluey, I think it was more than a year for sort of Disney to pick up Bluey and people over there to start officially watching it. And we've just seen, you know, since it officially launched, huge numbers, but a lot of people unofficially had gotten onto Bluey before that. And yeah, we were hearing from a lot of people saying, oh, don't tell anyone, but we've been watching Bluey and we're listening to the podcast. And then even this latest season, people who didn't have those sort of sneaky, not so legal files of episodes were listening to our podcast saying, look, we know we haven't seen the episode yet. You're recapping the new season. We're listening just so we can get our fix and we'll see that new season when it comes. So, yeah, I think there are some very lovely people out there who their Bluey world and their Gotta Be Done worlds are so enmeshed that they're just, yeah, substituting one for the other at this point.
That's amazing, Mary. And how can our listeners find your podcast?
So we can be found, Gotta Be Done, the Bluey podcast, wherever you find podcasts. You just have to search Gotta Be Done, or you can just go to our website, which is blueypod.com, so blueypod.com. We're on all the socials as well, at blueypod on Instagram, at blueypodcast on Twitter, and on Facebook you just have to look for us.
Beautiful. So I should start then by asking you both what your involvement with kids is in your professional roles. And I know that you've got several hats, so it's up to you kind of how you want to answer this question. But Mary, maybe should we start with you this time?
Yeah, the professional and the very unprofessional passion kind of blurs a bit, I suppose. My day job is at a university, so education, but not so much little kids. The Bluey podcast is very much a hobby, but we wear that. It's a weekly podcast. We've been doing it for more than 18 months now, so it feels like our other job and is very much a self-appointed expert in children's TV. But, you know, even though we're amateurs, we feel like we're learning more from week to week, and we're very much enthusiastic to share what we're learning.
And what about you, Kate?
So my involvement with kids is that I have three. And then in my day job, I do communications for the Victorian government. My portfolio is children and families. So working with children, usually in out-of-home care or other care arrangements. Yeah, helping communicate different initiatives or sometimes a bit of crisis PR as well. And previously I used to do mental health. And it's amazing, actually, the amount of people who listen to the Bluey episodes and Bluey podcast who say that they're doing it purely for a mental health break. So I always find it quite amusing to see the correlation between work, even when we're playing. Yeah, I think there's some really big themes that Bluey brings up. It's lovely to have a 7-minute show that can really beautifully touch on quite a lot of those themes around, for example, empathy and understanding your emotions. And my husband's a social worker, and he and I always joke that we'd love to sit some people down, just show them a couple of episodes of Bluey, and the world would be a much happier, saner place.
Our next question is really about you thinking about music and your childhood. So do you have a personal connection to music, maybe some TV shows and music that you really, really engaged with, or some songs that your parents played you, something that really sort of sparked that joy about music in your life? Maybe we'll start with you, Mary.
Absolutely, yes. I listened to your first episode and I think I could really relate that my parents didn't have any huge music passion to pass on. But what they did pass on was something that really sticks with me even to now, and it was being able to play with music. Because, yeah, some of my earliest memories are my dad singing It's a Long Way to Tipperary, but singing it, It's a Long Way to Tipperary, and, like, throwing me over his shoulders, which sounds very lame in some ways, but it was so much fun, and it does, tap into a later love of puns as well. Even though every note was off key, and I think that's probably what I just recreated there as well, I'm definitely not musical, but yeah, music wasn't just something sort of over there. It was something you could play with. We didn't have a lot of music in the house, but the random stuff that was, you know, on a mixtape that came in and we'd, you know, recorded onto a tape from the library, or watching Pirates of Penzance, or lots of, like, weird eclectic things coming in, all of it felt like, it was very much playful and the lyrics were important, and a lot of things that I sort of look back on now and think, and at the time it sort of was just a random song, but now I can sort of trace it all to very much feeding into a love of rock and roll. Actually, probably the song that kind of pulls it all together. We had one tape that was just called the rock and roll tape. Very high up on the rock and roll tape was Johnny B. Goode, which was always, you know, what I would now call a banger. I don't think I called it a banger back then. But then one of my dad's favourite movies, and a movie I would have seen very early on in primary school, was Back to the Future. And I think that was kind of the moment that the clouds parted and the light shone down. I was like, yes, this is rock and roll, and this is what I want to know more about. So, yeah, that was very formative for me.
Awesome. I love that. I love a good mixtape as well that, you know, that the family listens to over and over again.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of them were sort of mixtapes that were, you know, like best ofs at the library that would come home, get taped onto a second tape. Like, we were Napster before Napster existed, kind of thing. So sorry, music industry. Exactly.
Yeah. And with the little put the sticky tape over it too.
I've got to do that.
Repurpose somebody else's.
People who don't even know what cassette tapes are will find this conversation very difficult to understand if you haven't had good experience with a cassette tape.
You're listening to 2SERFM.
Same question should go to Kate now, actually. So do you have a personal connection with music from your childhood?
Definitely. So I may have the opposite to Mary in that my parents are both extremely musical. Yeah, my mum taught me piano when I was really little, probably about 3 or 4, and then I learned recorder when I was maybe, I don't know, when do you learn it at school? It's like grade 1 and it's torture for everyone. music for me was a huge passion. I really sort of found a skill that I really loved. And I went to a school where there wasn't really a music program at that point. I also did voice and I did theory. I did a bit of composing. So it was sort of like weekends. I was traveling to another town a little bit down the road to go to band rehearsals and going to band camps and doing all that sort of stuff. And then at school, I hit it a little bit because people didn't do music, or if they did, it was generally just guitar and drums, and I was full classical nerd. But then, yeah, I got a music scholarship, so then that changed my life completely. So I started going from my secondary college to a school in the city. I was just thrust into this world of being like a band leader and doing music history and styles, and music was just my life. Kind of always hoped that I'd get to combine the two passions I had, which was journalism and music. Yeah, I suppose entertainment reporter wasn't quite cutting it, but now we get to do that with the podcast. Because when you actually go into the Bluey universe, I think the thing that I've always loved so much about it is how rich the music is and how many classical pieces are adapted in a really clever way. They are the classical pieces from my childhood and my secondary school. To be honest, when I went to RMIT and did journalism and met the beautiful Mary, that was sort of a part of my life I guess I kind of shut down for quite a long time. And it's only since starting on the podcast that, like, because my husband's a big fan, he listens all the time, and he'll come in and he'll be like, I didn't know you knew all that stuff about the Baroque era and classical. And like, well, yeah, I mean, this is, yeah, a big part of my life for a long time. I just haven't had the opportunity to talk about it. So it's good.
It's really interesting too, because what you're both saying there kind of leads into something else that we ask people is if they're parents or if they've got other carer roles just in the village, you know, because you don't have to be a parent to be somebody who's involved in children's lives. We like being cool aunties and cool friends as well as being mums, you know. How does that kind of relate to your work? You know, does it come into your work, or is it the type of thing that you have to do, negotiate against your work? And I know you've both kind of, well, you've created a new job for yourselves with Gotta Be Done.
We need to get some money you know for what I mean? It. That's the thing.
Well, I assume Ludo's listening, and yeah. You know they're ready to kind of have you as official sponsors by now. But how is that negotiation between the professional side of your life plus the actual paying job thing?
Like, I very much went into journalism with, you know, one eye on that cool, like, rock writer gigs every night kind of vibe, which kind of eventuated, kind of didn't. Like, it was certainly all my 20s, I was going to so many gigs a week. I took a year of freelancing and travelled around the states going to music festivals and writing a music column and all that kind of thing. And it is so hard to marry that life, which in a way was kind of where I wanted to be, or what, where I would still love to be, with, well, how many nights would you have to get a babysitter to try and do that now with 2 kids? And yeah, I think there is kind of a feeling that if you want that lifestyle, you've got to have it before kids and then put it neatly away and move on to the Wiggles and to kid things, which we've certainly embraced some kid things in our lives, the kids particularly, but also Bluey and lots of that kid culture world. Look, I'd stepped away from that in my career before kids came along, but I think you sort of make those choices as well because you know kids are coming and you can't be out all night every night for your whole life. So it becomes practical as well. But then looking to think, well, how would I start to edge back into that? At the moment, it would be, well, find more daytime gigs to go to, I guess, that I could take the kids to and things like that. Like, I don't think there's a lot of opportunities out there for full-time children's music writers, like, you know, reviewing children's music or that sort of thing. But yeah, it definitely, I would love to see opportunities to kind of marry the two a bit more. And for people who just even not for work, but just because they love music, get to go to events that you can take the kids to. And, you know, they're out there and it would be great to see more of them as well.
Yeah. Kate, what about you?
Sorry, just to check, the question is about how do you marry the two sides, if that makes sense?
Yeah. And it's, look, and it's really up to you. I guess what we're interested in is how to people juggle, you know what I mean? So for us, the reason it kind of came up was because we, Shell and I, met years ago as academic ladies who were out at conferences, which is not dissimilar to music festivals, you know?
Yeah.
You do your thing during the day, you drink at night, you do, but it's also highly casualized. It's also temporary work. And so you come to a point where you say, well, if I have to settle down, what does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and what does that mean for my career? But also then, and if and when you have children of your own, or at least are in family life somehow, do you pretend you don't have them when all of that stuff's still going on? Do you bring them? Do you have shamelessly worked out a way to claim them on our tax? Let's just lean all the way in, you know? So I guess that's really, it's a way of saying, what are other people doing?
Yeah.
You know? How are they juggling that stuff?
Well, for myself, I'm trying to combine the worlds as best as I can, because I think, you know, music was such a formative part of my childhood. I'm really trying to create that for my own kids. And I should probably explain as well that my eldest daughter, Olivia, who's 8, has quite a severe disability. So she's got something called Kleefstra syndrome. It's a very rare genetic condition. If you imagine all the worst bits of epilepsy and autism and physical and mental delays, that's probably where we're at, quite moderate to severe. So music therapy for Olivia has always been the thing that has gotten through for her, and it's also the thing that I can provide to her. So from almost day dot, we bought a piano, and it's a crappy old piano, but it didn't matter because she was standing up and I was just helping her hit the keys. And she can pretty much just, if I'm guiding her hand now, play Happy Birthday or Row, Row, Row Your Boat, you know, and that sort of stuff to me just again takes me back to, you know, my mum showing me how to do the basic keys. And we've always tried to do things like explaining things to her through songs as well. So we've got songs for like putting on her shoes. My parents still actually are very involved with all of our kids musically. So we have at least once a week Skype session now where they do a repertoire of songs together and we all sing along. Yeah, I think it's about encouraging your kids to explore music as well. So it's probably a bit different for me because even though I went to lots of pub gigs, I never would have thought of myself, I guess, as like a concert person or a pub music person. For me, it was always coming back to that classical, just being interested in how notes are strung together and the sounds that they make and having songs, fragments in your head and then being able to put them on paper. So I've always tried to have like a really high variety of musical instruments in the house that I can just let the kids go nuts with and not get too precious about. So everything from those horrible plastic keyboards like in the movie Big to, you know, really exotic music shakers and things. And then I guess for me, music is also a bit of a timeout sanctuary. So, you know, parenting is stressful. Going into the kitchen and putting on Beyonce at, you know, Coachella soundtrack and putting it on. And then my son Will is now at an age where he'll come in and just start boogieing in the kitchen with me, dancing. And then I joined a choir as well, and that's been a fantastic stress release as an adult because I missed reading music. I know that sounds a bit odd, but making that sound as a group. I think, you know, that's the one thing I always loved about playing in bands and orchestras and things, was that collective noise that you make together, and that sort of spine tingling, you know, when it's all in harmony together, how wonderful that sounds. Singing has been a great way to reconnect with that. But I don't need my equipment, and I don't need to, you know, brush up my rusty finger skills. So, you know, as long as you've got a voice.
The old Yamaha.
Yeah, yeah. Well, no, I have a proper clarinet, I must say. I did get to, like, you know, grade 5 or 6 level, and my parents were like, okay, we should shell out the money now. So, yeah.
Hi, I'm Bill from Teeny Tiny Stevies, and you're listening to Music Mothers and Others.
Our guests today are Kate and Mary from the Gotta Be Done podcast. We're having a great time with both of you. And now it's time really for, I guess it's our future gazing question, isn't it, Liz? And it's where we want to ask you, can you think of any changes to the music industry? It doesn't have to be industry, I suppose. It can be other aspects that are not, you know, industrial. Some changes that you can recommend that would make it a bit more of a kid-friendly or a parent-friendly space. And so that might be concerts, or it might be how you access music or things like that. So just some perspectives.
Putting on a kid's writer, writer, I think there's, you know, creating that job, whatever it is.
Every publication should have one.
Go for it, Mary. Tell us your ideas.
Yeah, obviously there's plenty of people out there who have kids and then start thinking, okay, the world needs to fit them, you know, beyond me and my family. And I think a lot of the musicians of our generation have really done that, and I've loved seeing that. Patience from the Greats springs to mind up in Queensland. They put on some very family-friendly gigs, I think. Down here in Melbourne, I feel like it's out there, but some of the kid-specific things that are offered are very much, I feel like they consult the marketers before they consult anyone else. And the goal is Coachella for kids. Like, it's multi-day, and it's got to be Instagrammable, and just so much, when really a kid just wants space to run around and to be able to be noisy, not have to just sit in a seat. And then, yeah, if there's music, that's a bonus. And I feel like maybe if more musicians and more music promoters as well were prepared to put on events that were in the daytime and were a manageable kind of length and just had a bit of space and didn't try and pack people in and sit them down, they would probably have a lot more luck trying to get the family crowd there. And like everyone I know who has kids wants to go to gigs, but you do need space and time first and foremost. So, yeah, I don't think it should be that hard, but of course, you know, four mums in the room, we all know that as soon as kids are involved, things get a bit complicated a bit quickly.
Yeah, it sounds a bit like a I don't know, like a wish list or a dream, you know. Why isn't it out there exactly
well,
what you need? That's, why is it so hard? Come on, people.
That's it.
You know.
And I've been involved in putting on events where that you want them to be kid friendly, but as soon as you pick one time, someone else will say, oh, but that's when my kids sleep. And it's tough. So really, maybe if any promoter wanted to just put on a series of events on the hour, every hour, and a family could come for an hour at the time that suited them, and then it all rolls into the next hour and the next family comes. So I don't know. But yeah, it is definitely very tricky, but I really appreciate the number of musos and industry people out there who are trying to make things happen for kids. But yeah, just a bit more accessibility and not pitched at that super high end, I feel like would make a lot more people feel a lot more included.
True. And I guess we're talking now a bit about shows for kids, but there's nothing to say that we can't pitch shows that are for parents, you know, shows that are for adults that have got kids and have got all these restrictions that children bring on them, like you need to get a babysitter, and is this show going to go on at 11 o'clock at night, and will the headline act be on at 1? You know, that's not exactly parent friendly. Kate, have you got any answers for us?
I was just having flashbacks to a Glenn Hansard concert I went to, and I reckon it went to 12:30, and he was still going nuts on the stage, and I was just like,
I'm really sorry, we have to go. Babysitter's waiting. Yeah, I was loving what Mary was saying just then, and I'd like to add cost. I think cost is a huge barrier, especially for me as a parent, because $30 a ticket for a 3-year-old and an 8-year-old who's a bit reluctant anyway, you know, for a family of, well, now we're 5, it would be up over $100. I know, like, there's a lot of stage shows and stuff I know the kids would love, but then cost just becomes so prohibitive. You know, we're pretty down with flashing the cash when we need to. So I can't even imagine for people who, say, aren't on a double income, how that would preclude them from enjoying so many amazing acts. One of the greatest things, I think, where I live is that our local pub has a guy on a guitar on a Saturday afternoon, and the pub is super kid friendly. And there's a real difference, I think, between someone saying that they're kid friendly and actually being kid friendly. You know, our kids are allowed to go in there, and if they're screaming or they make noise or you have a dirty nappy you need to change, it's not a problem. They go out of their way to make the kids feel welcome and included. That has actually increased our patronage to that pub in particular. You know, we would support them a lot more. And we're buying takeaway meals from them at the moment because Melbourne's in lockdown. Creating inclusive environments is so critical. I don't think kids care that much about, you know, whether a song's great or if a singer's great. It's all about, to quote the castle, the vibe. And you know, if we're going to really foster that love of music, we all need to kind of be like, okay, so kids are going to be noisy and they're going to be a bit loud, but you know what? They're also going to be dancing at the front, and they will be the people that will be building a relationship and wanting to continue that when they're older because of the experiences they're having when they're young. So I think if there were a lot more businesses that were willing to do things like that, it would be a lot easier for parents to still get that music fix. Yeah, and I mean, personally, I think we should launch some sort of Bluey Coachella style event. Clearly there's a need, Mayor. I'm just saying. I'm just putting it out there. I would actually love, if I could wave my magic wand and come up with a show, I would love to do Bluey Meets the Orchestra, because there's so many amazing classical pieces in Bluey, and I think that would just be such an amazing way of introducing kids to, say, the different sounds of the orchestra, but also some of the greatest classical pieces that we've had. And yeah, who better to do it than a small blue heeler from Queensland?
Absolutely. Girls, do you have something that you and your kids are listening to?
Kids and I have been listening to our Disney Plus app in lockdown. Toy Story is the current favourite, and the soundtracks to all those movies just give and give and give. But what I've realised, like, and I would just put them on in the background for, you know, the kids to do their thing too, and it usually, you know, they're not even dancing, they're just jumping off furniture and the usual stuff. They're more attuned to the emotion of the music than I am even. And Bon, my 4-year-old, will say to me, oh, is Woody okay? Like, that's the danger music kind of thing. And it's made me realise, yeah, there's a lot to get out of this. It's not just background music.
Kate, what about you?
Well, I've been listening to sad music because we're in isolation here in Melbourne. Down, so you know, I need to feel my feelings. So I've been trying to get the kids to listen to a lot of Joni Mitchell lately. To be honest, they're not that interested. My daughter keeps requesting Taylor Swift, Shake It Off. So me and the kids are trying to listen to Joni Mitchell, but generally listening to Shake It Off.
I just like that optimism. Isn't that? That's just a little bit of the next generation. Anytime Dan or Scott or any of our leaders don't know what we're doing, we move. We'd shake it off. How lovely.
It's a song for the ages, that's for sure.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you'll take your seats, please. Our tour of the most famous sea of tranquility is about to begin.
Thanks so much to Mary, Kate, from...
Equation-wise, the first thing to do is to consider time as officially ended. We work on the other side of time.
Shadows of Tomorrow and Shelley Brown.
Yeah. Today is the shadow of tomorrow. Today is the present future of yesterday. Yesterday is the shadow of today. The darkness of the past is yesterday. And the light of the past is